Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jock here, and it's been a little while. I hope you have enjoyed your holidays. You've enjoyed coming into this new year, this 2024. This is the first episode that we have done this new year, and I am absolutely delighted to have my guest today, Dr. Jeff Tarrant, who is the author of a fabulous book called Becoming Psychic. And if you're interested in psychic phenomena, paranormal phenomena, psi phenomena, and not from an airy-fairy, can't believe it, way out there, and looking for some grounded science and understanding, then this is the book for you. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'm delighted to have Jeff on here. And we're just going to chat and see where the wind takes us and see where we go. We're going to talk about everything and anything from psychic development, UFOs, mediumship, transmediumship, and anything else that takes our fancy. Jeff, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good. Thanks so much. It's good to be here and finally meet you in person.
I know. We're laughing beforehand because we, like anything, technology is brilliant until it's not. And then we find out that really it is the human error factor that causes us to do these silly things. So, Jeff, like I said at the beginning, I loved your book. And what I loved about your book was how down to earth it was, but how grounded in science it was and how it really gave me... I mean, I remember my wife and I were driving along, and it's not often that I turn around and my wife goes, you know what, this is an awesome book, right? Because she can be a very hard audience. And yourself and Dr. Lisa Miller, we loved your books equally, to the point where I bought it on Kindle, bought it on Audible, and I have the paperback on me. So
it's good. Well, thank you.
And it's given, you know, it's helped me a lot as well. I'm currently in the process of doing a master's and moving on to a PhD in transpersonal psychology. So I really like the fact that it was grounded in science. But before we jump into all that, tell us about your passion for this field, because you had an interest in it, but you were initially skeptical of it.
Well, yes and no, right? I mean, you know, as a kid, I was totally into all this stuff, and yeah. I loved it. It was, you know, to some degree, it was all I kind of cared about was the weird right. stuff. Yeah. But then, yeah, you know, as I got older and, you know, started questioning things and learning more and becoming more trained as a psychologist and a neuroscientist. Mm. Yeah, I attribute a lot of my training, my professional training, to kind of beating that out of me, so to speak, and, you know, kind of encouraging the idea that, well, if we can't prove it in a laboratory, then it doesn't exist. It's not real. And so there was many years where I was a pretty hardcore skeptic, but it was funny because I still loved watching The X-Files, and I still loved, so clearly there was some part of my brain that, I really resonate with The X-Files, you know, I want to believe, right?
I love that. Yeah.
So it was kind of, I think I still had that. There was like, I want to believe, but I don't. Yeah. And then, you know, as life does, it presented me with some opportunities to actually study this, and you know, and now I've come back around to the other side again, and you know, I've become more of I do believe as opposed to I want to believe. I've still got a significant skeptical nature, but I've seen too many things, and it makes too much sense to me at this point to try to deny it.
What was your, I mean, you go through loads of examples in the book, and I love the fact that you go so excited, you couldn't wait to get a hold of measuring people's brainwaves and their activity. But what was it for you, because as you went into this, you know, I'm going to research this, I've got an opportunity to research the neuroscience and to research the mystical experiences, but there had to be one pivotal moment where the information just did not, it's like the hard problem in consciousness. It just didn't make sense, right? It just, at that point, you were like, there's got to be something more in this because this doesn't materialistically make sense in the world. What was that pivotal moment for you?
I mean, there's probably been several of those, right? Like, I think it's been a building process of lots of weird little moments that don't make sense or don't fit with sort of a materialistic, a strictly materialistic viewpoint. But when you were asking the question, the thing that jumped into my brain was, you know, when I first was able to measure Laura Lynn Jackson. And, you know, she's a very well-known medium. She's amazing. She's really quite talented. And, you know, and the thing that really stood out with her that was so interesting and unique, and especially from a neuroscientific standpoint, is that she has this very distinct way of how she perceives information when she's doing a psychic reading versus doing a mediumship reading. For her, they're two very different processes. Yeah. And when she's doing a psychic reading, she sees it on her inner screen, she calls it, on the left visual field. And when she's doing a mediumship reading, she sees it in her right visual field. And so this is just something she's noted about herself and how she works. But what was really cool is that when we measured her brain, while she was doing a psychic reading and a mediumship reading, that's exactly what showed up was, you know, the opposite sides of the occipital lobe where the visual processing is happening corresponded with exactly what she was reporting. And so, you know, that was a really interesting one where it was like, wow, wait a minute, this, she's not seeing anything out here. Like, we're just in a boring conference room.
Yeah.
But her brain is processing information and it's processing it exactly the way she describes. So for me, even though it doesn't prove anything, it's pretty convincing, right? That it's like, well, something is going on here. This isn't just make believe, right? Like the brain is processing information, even if I can't see it.
Did she report any physical sensations that were different in her body that were during your research that she could say, I could feel a certain thing that was different rather than it just being her perception of what was happening in the mind, if you like, or her brain hemispheres?
That's a good question. And I actually don't know. I'm going to see her in a couple of days and, and I'll have to ask her, but,
I say Jock from Paranormal wants to know this.
I will. I'll make sure and ask her. But you know, the one thing that is interesting is, you know, I've seen Laura work several times and, you know, a lot of times it's in sort of a group situation where she's doing a gallery reading, you know, where she's kind of just picking up whatever she picks up in the room and goes over there and does a short reading and then moves along. And when I've seen her do this, and she's described this to me, that she's kind of not there. Like, she's doing it, but she's almost unaware of the external environment. And so it lends me to sort of believe that maybe she's not really tuned into her body as much when she's in that zone, that it's like she's kind of out here somewhere. But I don't know that for a fact. I need to kind of verify that with her.
That actually is interesting. That correlates to my own experiences and my wife's experiences. We used to run, we used to serve and run our own church back in the UK. And the way I can explain that was, it would be if you were up on platform or you were up doing a gallery, or as they would say, a gallery setting, we would know it as on platform. You would have no idea where you were going to, but all of a sudden you get up and you're not there and you're kind of, you know exactly where you're going, you know exactly who you're going to, and you know what's actually happening. So it's interesting because it is almost that there's a sense of displacement of the self, or whatever we want to call that, that you, it displaces and then something else takes over and boom, you're in that flow. So that's, it's really interesting. And it would be really interesting to see, to hear her experiences in a physiological or a biological point as well, to see what she embodies, if she feels anything differently. And I want to kind of jump on as well, because in your book is where you talk about maybe the trance states and xenoglossy and the ability to come through. And you worked with, I can't remember her name, but you worked with a woman that
Janet Mayer.
Janet Mayer, that's it. Yeah, you worked with her. And so here's the thing. What you experienced there, would that be a similar to what they call speaking in tongues, or what they call this whole idea of light language, which is not something that I really am drawn to in any way, but, or was there some kind of coherent intelligence behind what she was bringing through?
Yeah. And so just to give kind of a quick background to Janet and what her, yeah, her story is, she was actually the very first person that I worked with in this field. Yeah. And, it's funny because we're still friends and we still talk periodically. And I jokingly blame her, right? I'm like, it's your fault that I'm doing this, right? That, in a good way, of course.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, absolutely.
But you know, Janet, she's a wonderful psychic medium.
Yeah.
Years ago, I mean, gosh, now it would have been about 15 years or so. I'm not quite sure. She had this experience during a holotropic breathwork exercise.
Stanislav Graf's work. I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so she was doing this with her sister. So, you know, it was a group environment like it's normally done. You're breathing rapidly. There's evocative music. And anyway, she sat up in the middle of this session, and this what sounded like a language just started kind of coming out of her. And she had no idea what was happening. She couldn't really control it. She didn't even know if it was a language for sure, because she didn't know if she was saying something. And anyway, she, over time, this holotropic breathwork seemed to have unlocked this, because after this experience, it kept happening. You know, like when she was in the grocery store and when she was cooking dinner and driving her car, right? Like this language would just kind of come through. And it took 4 years before she found somebody who would actually listen to her at, you know, some experts, you know, linguists and anthropologists. And she finally found somebody who would listen to her tapes. And this person was an anthropologist at the Smithsonian, who was also a shaman in a previous lifetime in South America, and recognized her language. And so over time translated several of her tapes, and she was speaking up to four different tribal languages, South American tribal languages. And so, you know, and usually when they were translated, they were prayers or healings or teachings. Mm. A lot of it had to do with honoring Mother Earth and, you know, being connected to nature and you know, important spiritual ways, things like that. Mm. But it was interesting because she didn't know, she still doesn't know what she's saying. Like, she can turn it on or off now, but she has no idea what she's saying. And so it's interesting because you brought up speaking in tongues. Which, you know, the official term is glossolalia.
Glossolalia, yeah.
And, you know, and it's a Pentecostal kind of a thing, right? Where people get worked up into a religious fervor and they start saying something that sounds like a language. And so for Janet, a lot of the people that she approached, professors and whatnot, said, oh, that's glossolalia. You know, it's just, you know, and kind of dismissed it, right? Because glossolalia, it's not an actual human language, right? So there's nothing to translate, because
exactly, yes,
it sounds right.
Yeah.
That's the difference. And so for me, it can't be glossolalia, because you know, these are actual languages, and she's actually saying something that can be translated. So for me, the only, and it sounds funny when I say this, but the only logical explanation is that she's channeling some kind of either shamans in the, you know, in South America, or some other entities, but somehow she's able to allow that energy to move through her. And you know, how that works. And I mean, I've got some ideas about how it might work, but you know, that's the only explanation, because otherwise it doesn't make any sense. She's got to be getting information from somewhere.
Do you know what? I want to go into your ideas, because I find that fascinating, especially from like trans conditions and channeling, because I have my own feelings on it. But what I think it's important for anybody who's listening out there to make the distinction And I've said this many times, and you can hate me if you want, guys, but this light language stuff that goes out there is just, it is glossolalia. It's the same as anything that's in the Pentecostal side. And there's no, for me personally, my personal opinion, and you can write in all you want, but for me, there is no evidence. And you all know me, I'm very hard on evidence. I need evidence, whether it's scientific evidence, spiritual evidence. There has to be a continuity. There has to be a pattern. There has to be a serious evidence. We don't see that. What is interesting is that she didn't, and I think this is fascinating, and I think this gives credence as well to a mediumistic aspect of it. She had no idea what she was speaking. She had no idea at all. And it took a shaman to be able to bring that forward and really saying, this is the language, and there is a coherent, intelligent pattern to it. And I think that's really important. This is not gobbledygook. There was a coherent pattern. So thinking about this, I love how you get into channeling, because that's my next thing. So
yeah.
People are going to hate me for this as well. I have an issue with channeling. I don't seem to have an issue with trance conditions and going into a trance state, because I've had experience of that myself as well. I know that when the trance condition happens and we allow that connection, that melding of energies, whether the spirit's coming through, there's intelligence. And often a really, really good trance medium, I don't like to use the term trance channel, but a trance medium, they don't remember, they have no idea of what's going on. There's a sense of disassociation that happens. And they separate, and this is another argument people come up with, they separate the idea of self going away and an intelligent force or intelligent being that will come in and communicate. My issue with the channeling side of things is, and I don't know where you fit with this, is are they channeling and it's coming really from their own perceptions, their own knowledge, their deep own subconscious? Because I can perceive a massive difference between someone who's in deep trance or to someone who's just channeling wisdom that they're saying is coming from such and such, but I feel, I discern that it's coming from them and it's coming from their intellect and their knowledge of maybe what they've studied or what they've been interested in. Where do you fit in that side of things?
Oof, that is a tough one. That's a really tricky one. I've been able to work with quite a number of mediums now. You know, I've not kept track, but you know, whatever, let's say 20 or 30.
Yeah.
And these are like pretty high level mediums, right? For the most part. And it's interesting because they seem to have levels of trance. So most of them will say that they're at least in a light trance, or what they would characterize as a light trance. Okay. And that might be like what Laura experiences, right? Because you can get her attention, you know, if she's doing a reading and she's kind of like in her own zone.
Yeah.
It's hard to get her attention. You know, I can be jumping up and down in the background going, Laura, you know, and
she's in
she's in the flow. She didn't even see me. Right. And,
no.
but eventually she will, right. She'll kind of click in and, oh, okay. Oh, we've got 5 minutes. Okay. And so a lot of them kind of talk about being in a light trance, but those are the more, you know, what I would consider sort of more mental mediums, right? Where they're in telepathic communication with these other entities, and then they're translating it. So they're getting this information in their own head, theoretically from another entity, and then they're translating it and trying to make sense out of it and put it in human words.
Yeah.
I've only worked with, I don't know, a handful of what we might consider trance mediums, where, you know, their voice kind of changes a bit. They're much more disconnected. Yeah. A lot of times they have no memory whatsoever of what they've said. And, you know, I kind of have mixed feelings as well. On the one hand.
All right. let's get into it. Yeah. Let's go there.
There have been, because I've been sitting with people where they've done this, and there's just something in my gut that's like, oh, this feels weird.
Right.
This feels like they're kind of making stuff up, you know? And,
okay.
But then there have been other times where I've not had that feeling, and it does feel like a higher wisdom of some kind, right? But all I've got to go on is my gut feeling, right? And this is part of the problem, is that from a scientific perspective, I can't prove any of it one way or the other, and that's where I have trouble, right? Is especially trouble from a scientific perspective, is, you know, people say, oh, I can communicate with angels or fairies or aliens, or it's like, well, I mean, that's cool, but I can't prove anything there. There's nothing, you know, it's just there. Yeah. I just have to trust them, or not, but you know, and usually I'm just agnostic about it. It's like, cool. Right. You know, and, you know, but from a scientific perspective, there's no, you know, at least with mediumship, where you're talking to somebody who's deceased, you could verify some things, you know, you know, you could verify that the things they're saying make sense and react in kind of the physical world, and that there's some way to sort of demonstrate that it's like, oh yeah, they did have that relationship, or they did live in this place, or they did go by that nickname, whatever. So it's tricky, you know? Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't know what you're, it sounds like maybe you're even more skeptical than me. I don't know.
Well, all right. So here's the, I'm like you, right? But I mean, I've been a professional medium for over 2 decades. I have experience in seances and trance and all sorts of things, but I have a very discerning nature when it comes down to it. And like you, I've been in conditions where I'm like, okay, pardon the French MD who's listening, that's bollocks. That's coming from them, and that's, or they, wait a minute, that has got substance to it. And I am really fascinated. I have a passion for this, the trance condition. And part of the reasons why I'm now on an academic path is because I want to understand more of psychosis, obsession. I want to understand, you know, permitted possessive states, such as in the trance condition. And I'm really fascinated about where can we go with this scientifically. And for me, I think there's a potential bridge in terms of evidential research that can maybe go into it. If we go back to, you know, SPR studies, you know, way back in the day, where we had cross correspondences where people were in trans conditions and was able to identify verifiable evidence that, you know, distance and time made no real problem. I think there's a possibility that we can look more into the science of it. And I'm also fascinated by, which it brings us into your whole realm, is the brain and mind connection. Because I always say to people, you know, when Lisa and I was chatting as well, is, and I wrote an article on PDN about this, is defending the soul, which was the article. But my whole idea is that your mind is a psychological building blocks of your reality. That's how I feel. And so I always ask the question, is the mind in the brain or is the brain in the mind? And this is like one of these massive arguments, like, you know, hard problem of consciousness. So I feel for me, there's a great deal of miscommunication and misunderstanding in mediumship or even in psi, when it comes down to channeling, trance and things like that. But I think there's an exciting possibility to move forward in doing further research in the trance conditions. And there's very little of it. There's very little science research in psychometry, which I find fascinating from my own experiences as well. So I think there's a way that there's an element that we haven't really dove into deeper. And I think we can. How we do it, I don't know. Maybe this is where you come in with the whole idea of the, you know, the brain and the cerebral and working with mediums that are legitimately are in trans conditions and not making it up. And that's the difficulty.
Right. You know, and you know, one of the, I think one of the challenges that you're kind of highlighting is that, you know, even though there's not a lot of data, for people in trans conditions, or especially trans mediumship. But, you know, certainly we have data on people being in trance, because, you know, that can be a lot of different things, you know, different shamanic traditions or, you know, hypnosis, deep meditation. And, you know, what they all seem to have in common from a brain perspective, for the most part. And by the way, everything I say related to the brain has that little caveat that it's like, well, this isn't true 100% of the time, right? It's like, you know, there's too many different people that have different brain structures, you know, like everybody's not going to look the same. Anyway, you know, one of the sort of primary things that we see in trance state is this increase of slow brainwave activity, right? So especially theta. And, you know, theta is an interesting brainwave because it's also associated with things like the subconscious and with things like memory. And so this gets into an interesting issue, right? And it's kind of what you were bringing up, right? It's like, is this coming from you?
Exactly.
You know, even if you don't think it is, it's like, well, if it's coming from your subconscious, well, subconscious, it's below consciousness. You're not normally aware of it. So, right. So is this you, or are you actually tapping into another consciousness out there? Right. I don't know.
It's fascinating though, to this is what I'm really, I'm really excited about the potentially doing that, because it's, I think there's a lot more that we can do with it. And I tend to want to fall into it is going to be another intelligence that's coming through because of maybe the level of evidence that can happen. And maybe that's where we have to go, you know, scientifically, we have to maybe hit more towards evidence of an experiential nature. Because even in meta-analysis or anything that we look at, there's very little experiential aspects to it. It's just data. And one of the things I think about, and I go back to, you know, Cardell and Zen's paper, where it's looking at all the meta-analysis of all the Psy research, and you look at, and it's fantastic. I mean, I love the paper, but there's not, I think we miss a hidden bridge. We're missing the experiential concept. No, I get it. It's difficult. It's difficult for us to measure that experience. But what if the experience came up with hard empirical evidence? That would then take us to another dimension. Well, maybe we can go deeper with this research. And I love how you bring in this whole idea that you're the neuroscience. And I want to kind of jump into this. Do you think then the technology that you work with, which I find is fascinating, can possibly lend a hand to identifying those patterns and maybe helping a medium get into a more dissociative state of a slower brainwave, theta wave, in order to maybe research this potential evidential aspect?
Yeah, that's a great question. And of course, one that's, you know, is likely to get me excited. You may have to cut me off here after a couple of minutes, but
go for it.
So, you know, so my background, you know, I work with a lot of technology. So not just measuring the brain, but also using technology to train the brain. So like neurofeedback or brain stimulation technologies. And, you know, and I talk about this some in the book because, you know, we've done enough kind of little mini experiments that what we've seen is that we can stimulate the brain in a way that does kind of seems to expedite the process for people. It kind of helps them tap in quicker or more easily or have different kinds of experiences. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about that, and, you know, I'm not the first person to try to do this. I mean, this has been, you know, people have been playing with this idea as long as we've had technology.
I think the way that you bring it forward, but, Jeff, is a lot easier.
Yeah, right. It's a lot easier now. Yeah. we have better technology and it's cheaper. You know.
Oh, God, yeah.
But, you know, one of the things that's interesting is that very often, what you're seeing is that you actually have to shut the brain down. So I'm saying brain stimulation, and it's a little bit confusing because anytime you're putting something into the brain, you're stimulating it, right? So, but if I put really slow frequencies into the brain, then what it's doing is actually shutting it down, right? It's actually, and so what we see is that a lot of times we get bigger results in terms of mediumship or psychic activity if we shut down certain parts. So, you know, and it gets to part of our earlier conversation that, at least from my perspective, I think the brain is largely interfering with our natural psychic abilities, and it sort of prevents it. It limits information, which is largely what the brain does. That's its job, you know, is to filter information.
It is a filter. I love the way you see a filter, because that's the way I go. It's like, it's an expression of the mind, guys. It's only there because the mind allows it, and it's filtering. It's distilling the information. It's getting in the way.
Yes, totally. And the more of this I study, the more clear that this is. And so largely what we have to do is get the brain out of the way. And now you can't shut your whole brain off, because then, you know, well, you'd be dead. Right. Or at a minimum, you wouldn't.
Okay. Let me devil's that. Would you? Because I go back to Dr. Ian McGilchrist and Ian McGilchrist research, where there's been no brain, but there's still been activity. There's still been consciousness. So that, I mean, again, that's another episode, but it's,
yeah.
Would we be dead? I don't know. No.
Yeah. I don't know either, but let me reframe my statement. But so very often what you'll see is that with these high level psychics and mediums, one part of the brain will shut down. There'll be an increase of slow activity, but another part of the brain will actually increase fast activity at the same time. And what I suspect is that this is how they are able to, first, connect with this information that's in a broader field, we'll say. But then you have to have some activation in order to bring it into your conscious mind and retain it, hold on to it, put words to it, explain it, right? You kind of got to do both, because otherwise, so I think of it like a dream state, right? Like where you have an interesting dream and then you wake up and you can't hold on to it. It just disappears, right? And so, you know, you're transitioning from this really deep state of consciousness to waking consciousness. And if there's not some sort of a way to connect those two, then, you know, you lose it. You can't hold on to it. And so I feel like that's one of the skills that these really high-level mediums and psychics have, is somehow they have figured out how to enter a state of consciousness where they can do both. Or shift really quick between the two.
Do you feel then, from your research with the kind of brain and mind connection with mediums, then that we as mediums or in the mediums you've researched, that they're particularly adept on one part of the brain for one particular strength in their mediumistic capacity? So like clairvoyance, claircognizance, clairaudience. Is there a correlation to another aspect of the brain, or maybe even a mixture that this medium, you can tell in their brain that they're really operating clairaudiently or clairvoyantly?
So far, I have not been able to see anything that shows that really clearly. And it's interesting, right? Because, and part of the problem may be that most of the mediums I've talked to work out of multiple clair senses, right? Yeah. They're not just clairvoyant or not just clairaudient. They work out of multiple senses. Mm-hmm. And so that's going to confuse things. But the one thing that I do see a lot is activation. And by activation, I'm in this case, I mean increased fast brainwave activity, especially gamma, In the occipital lobe, in the very back of the brain, which is the visual processing. So we talked about that a little bit with Laura Lynn. But actually I see it all the time. And it's interesting because, you know, that's visual processing. Okay, fine. But it even shows up there with people who are more clairaudient. So even though they're not seeing things, it still seems to show up back here. So it makes me feel like maybe that part of the brain, it's not just visual processing. It's much more of a, what do I want to say? Sort of a sensory integration or a, almost like a perception, you know, right. How we perceive the world is being, you know, somewhat engaged through that occipital lobe. Even though we think of it as just visual, I think it's more.
That's fascinating, actually, because it's when you think about that aspect of the brain working towards more of the sight or the inner sight, you just expect it to be sight. But then the very fact that there is a sense of clairaudience or inner hearing from the same area that has mainly dealt, I think that's fascinating. And I think that's another facet of study that you could look at. One of the things that I'll say though, and I don't know if Laura's like this, but I think every good medium knows that they're stronger in one particular ability than another. For me, it's clairaudience more than it is anything else. While Laura has developed abilities on every area, she's going to have one particular strength. And one that she probably, and it would be interesting to see where the brain lights up in that particular strength. And I don't know where that goes. And can you induce, all right, can you make the medium or the recipient stronger by utilizing the technology that you talk about?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And it's, you know, so part of your question, we've started to explore. Part of it we haven't yet. And so, you know, a lot of the stimulation techniques that we've used have been on the occipital lobe or targeting, you know, sort of visual information. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be pretty effective, right? But we haven't really targeted, like, because the other big one would be clairaudience.
Yeah.
And you know, we would probably target that in the temporal lobes, you know, where we process more of the auditory information. And, you know, I haven't done as much with that, you know, because really the other areas that we've explored more directly, one of them is, you know, the God spot, right? So the right parietal lobe back here, which seems to be not for everybody, but I'd say 70% of the mediums, they show some unusual activity back there. And I think it's important for getting out of your own ego structure and connecting to something outside of yourself. So we try to shut this thing down. And then the other one that actually other researchers have found this just recently. I don't know if you saw the study with micro PK.
You need to send me details and I haven't seen it, but I'll dive into that one.
I'll send it to you. But they were using repetitive transcranial magnetic stimulation and shut down the left frontal lobe of people. And then had them do a micro PK experiment with like a random number generator. What they found was if they shut down that left frontal lobe, they did better. They had more significant results of influencing. The random number generator than, actually I've got it right here. It was published in, Cortex and, just came out, you know, so. It's interesting because there's other, right? So there's other researchers who are exploring kind of similar areas of how can we stimulate the brain to either shut down things or activate them to show enhanced, you know, psi abilities.
I love that you do that. I love that you're researching that. And anybody who's listening out there, if you want to, you know, dive into that even more, which is a fascinating thing. And then go on, you know, go on to Jeff's website, the neuros. What was it again, Jeff? Neuroscience.
Actually, probably Psychic Mind Science is probably the better science. One.
Yeah, because there's equipment there that you can get a hold of if you want to do this research. And I, you know, for myself, I'm fascinated. In fact, actually, it's one of the things I'm looking at is getting some of that equipment, although I don't have a PC, I have a Mac, which really puts me in a really bad place. Because I said to the wife, I said, yeah, it's brilliant. Let's just go and get that stuff and then we'll do some research ourselves. And I was like, oh God, it's all PC. So that's not good. So if you're in Mac, you've got to wait and something else happening. But I think your research is fascinating for that with your, and I want to ask you this as well, because obviously you're working with mediums all the time, but you allude to your own experiences in the book. So I know that you know, yoga and meditation, you've done it. So have you found that with your neurofeedback, with what you've done with it, have you increased your ability to experience, to have mystical experiences?
So I've got a couple of answers to that. for better or worse, right? And you can get a sense of this from reading the book, right? Is that
absolutely?
I have a lot of interests, and my tendency is I'm like, ooh, I'm interested in that. I'm going to go check this out. And so even with my own development, you know, I'll be like, ooh, I wonder if I can get better at whatever, psychic stuff. And so I'll practice and I'll practice and I'll practice and I'll practice until the point that I'm convinced that I can do it. And then I'm kind of like, okay, what else is there? Right. What's like, oh, let's try this. So I tend not. So yes, I have used technology and I have proven to myself that I can do pretty much all of these things, right? To some degree, certainly not at a professional level, right? But beyond chance.
Yeah.
And so I've kind of dabbled with all those things, but I've never stuck with it long enough to get like really, really, really good, except now here's the other part of it. So more recently, maybe, I don't know, 6 months ago or a year ago, I don't know if it's remembered or kind of really cued in that really my strength in all of these fields is more with like energy healing,
right,
and with more of the PK kind of stuff. And so it's like, that's more of a natural, easy process for me.
Right.
And so, you know, it was like, oh, you know what? Why don't I do that? Like, I'm trying to teach myself all these other things that I can do it. But it's like I have more of a built-in ease with some of these other processes. And it's like, well, why don't I do that? Why don't I get really good at the things that I have more of an inclination toward? And so that's what I've been doing. I've been doing more training with energy healing and energy work.
Wow.
And so, you know, that's what I've been doing lately.
And have you found a correlation to the energy healing and that side of things with your technology, that technology that you've utilized has helped you increase that potential power?
Actually, I haven't really started using the technology to enhance that as much because it's a good question. It's an interesting question, you know, but, what I've been doing more is, you know, more energy work, more qigong, and more, practicing more with people on the table and doing more, more energy training. And so more of the traditional kinds of approaches than using, the technology. And maybe that's because I already feel like a natural ease with it. Like it's not something that I feel like I have to work particularly hard to develop. Like it's pretty easy for me. And so maybe that's why I haven't really even worried about the technology for myself, because it's kind of like, well, I can kind of already do this. Like, I don't really need the tech, right? You know, but if it was psychic or mediumship or stuff like that, then yeah, I would absolutely be zapping my brain more,
I'm going to try it, but I think what would be interesting, I'm going to kind of throw you under the bus here, because it's bearing in mind you're a scientist and it's very hard. Have you had experiences where you have had maybe a target that you've been helping in a healing process where you have really had positive results from what you've been doing or from your group or whatever? Let's talk a little bit about your wins with your healing.
Yeah. I'll give you a couple of things that have been pretty recent, but
all right.
I don't know that any of them are, it's not like I can show that I've healed cancer or something, right? Like just over the weekend, I was doing a training, participating in an energy work kind of a thing. And, you know, you take turns, right? Like being on the table or somebody, whatever. And so I had somebody on the table and, you know, was checking in beforehand. What's going on? You know, is there anything I need to know about? She said, ma'am, my left shoulder is just, you know, and she's like, it's been like this. It's chronic. Like my left shoulder is a wreck, you know, like, and she's like, so if you feel like going up there, that would be great. Okay. So I'm doing my normal. I'm doing my kind of process going through the session. At some point I was like, okay, I'm going to go up to that left shoulder, 'cause she asked me to, basically. I wasn't particularly drawn to go there. But I went up there, and because the way the room was set up, I couldn't really get to it very well. It was very awkward. And I couldn't stay there for more than a couple of minutes, 'cause it was just a very awkward setup. So I just left it alone and said, well, whatever. I can't do anything with that. And then I went to the head, and I was actually, this process that I'm using right now involves touch, physical touch. But right. In this case, I was off of the head. I wasn't touching the head, and I was working with the energy field around the head and really just sensing it, holding it, supporting it, not trying to make anything happen, almost kind of tapping into, you know, you might think of like, zero point or something like that, right?
Yeah,
kind of getting into this no mind state where I'm just supporting the energy field of the person. So I did that for a while and, you know, wrapped it up. And honestly, I was going like, I have no idea if I'm doing anything here or not, right? Like, I don't know. So we wrapped it up and then we processed afterwards. And the person on the table, she said, dude, I could totally tell when you were on my head and what you were doing up there. And she said, and my shoulder, she said, as soon as you let go of the energy around my head, my shoulder pain went away. It's completely gone. And I'm like, oh, okay. And we had training the next day. And she said, my shoulder still doesn't hurt. Like, it doesn't hurt at all. And it's like,
that's brilliant.
Okay. Right. But so it's interesting, right? Because it was like, it wasn't like I went in and said, I am going to fix your shoulder.
No.
And in fact, I felt like I wasn't doing anything. But I think that's
the important point.
I think
listening, I think that's really fundamental point to think about, because if you're in the way, nothing's going to happen, and if you're out the way, the expectation is not there, and so if you're not attached to the expectations, then wondrous things can happen. I think you've just proven that, to a point.
and that's actually, you know, this process that I'm doing right now, it's called biodynamic craniosacral therapy.
Wow.
And I like it a lot. And I like it because it has this very non-directive approach, right? It's like, I'm not curing you. I'm not assessing you even. I'm just making contact with you and with your energy and supporting you. I'm trying to drop myself into a place that's very centered and grounded and supportive. And I trust that your energy field can use that to heal itself. I don't have to do anything. And so I really like that approach. It feels very, respectful of the other person and, and effective. It really seems to work. So anyway, I think your point was a really good one.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it definitely is. And thank you for sharing that, because it just shows you the... And I think the way I liken that is to you being a valve, and you allowing the valve to open and just allowing this divine energy, whatever you call it, or whether you kind of aspire to it, to let that flow through. And it's the person's change in the energy that is happening. And I find it fascinating. So where do you want to go, Jeff, with your research now, and personally and also professionally?
Where to start? I do have a random number generator experiment that I'm kind of working on right now, where, you know, I've got data from a bunch of mediums, psychic mediums, doing my random number generator experiment, trying to influence it. Okay. And what I want to do, and it's fairly impressive. And then what I want to do is, what I don't have is a control group, right? Get a bunch of people who are not psychic mediums and have them go through the exact same process.
You know, you can go on the internet and you can go on TikTok and you can find everybody who thinks they're a medium that is not a medium. And that's, you got a control group. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I'm pretty excited about that. And I've already got a good chunk of the data. And that's just really fun for me.
Whatever we can do in PDN to help you, and even put it out there in an article or anything, or ask for, we'll be happy to support that.
That'd be great. I'll take you up on that. I'm waiting on one of my research partners to kind of give me the thumbs up for stuff that isn't relevant here. But the other studies that are really on my mind are much more in line with what we've been discussing, right? Is taking this idea of, can we stimulate the brain in a consistent way to enhance probably psychic abilities? Because it's easier to test, right? It's easier to sort of demonstrate. Mm. And, you know, I've got ideas on how to do that, but I want to do it in a more controlled way. I don't want to get ridiculous, because I think when it gets too controlled, you take away the person's ability to tap in, because you've made it too rigid. But at the same time, you know, like in the book, I give lots of examples of things, but it wasn't really a controlled research. It was kind of like, hey, I brought this person in and we hooked him up and we did this thing and here's what happened. And it was pretty cool. Right. But it's like, well,
still valid. You know. I mean, I think it's still okay. You might have a lot of academics argue the point in a journal. It's not something you're going to put in a journal, but I think what I love about it is the fact that you're distilling this academic field and you're bringing it in, which I am passionate about, bringing that academia to a lay community to help them to understand it and say, this is where it is. This is exciting. And this is how you understand it. And don't, you know, because you're not going to have members of the general public read a journal. They're just going to get bored.
Yeah. Well, and actually, I was just thinking about this yesterday, that as much as I appreciate the attempts to have controlled research studies with mediumship and whatever, I feel like you lose something in that, because
absolutely,
because you make it kind of artificial. And that's one of the reasons I've done kind of what I've done, is it's like, well, I want it to be as real as possible. Like, I want you to do your work exactly how you do your work. And I'm not going to tell you how to do it, right? Like, you do your work. I'm just going to record stuff and ask you a bunch of questions and see what we get, right? Because, you know, so it's a more naturalistic approach.
I love that, yeah.
And, you know, I think there's value to both, right? But maybe the two together can help kind of round out our understanding of this stuff, like, rather than just one or the other.
I'm glad you said the two together, because I'm in the process. I've got up until the 12th of February to get my next dissertation, and mine's is formulating on a on a sacred science, and I think you've given me an idea that I can really run with as well, because I love this idea of a sacred science. Maybe we can bring the two of them together, and I think that's what's missing. I mean the research that you want to do and the research that we've spoke about is really exciting, and I hope that you do, or somebody else or does a lot more with trans. I'm fascinated. I want to do a lot more with trans work, really deep trans work, and understanding that. And that excites me. And it excites me on this whole idea and the premise that you have of, can we utilize technology to enhance our abilities? And going in, I don't believe I'm going to jump into this, because you also talk about psychedelics, right? And it brings me to this, right? Okay, so does the technology enhance psychedelics? Does the psychedelics enhance the technology? Or do they both have separate correlates to what you're trying to do? Because you've got experience in the psychedelic world.
I do. both personally and professionally. Are you asking the question, do psychedelics facilitate more psychic type development?
Yeah, so the psychedelics, are they facilitating more of these mystical experiences that we can measure from psychic or evidential point of view? And is there a potentially bringing technology into that as well?
Yeah, so, you know, yes, yes, yes. So it's pretty clear that people that work with psychedelics, you know, so whether it's psilocybin or ayahuasca or 5-MeO-DMT, whatever, that it does tend to launch people's spirituality. And, you know, because people have these experiences of unity or connection and, you know, intense love, meeting other entities in these other realms, you know, all these things that are very convincing from a subjective perspective. When you have them, nobody ever comes out and goes like, oh, that was garbage. You know, they come out and they go like, that was more real than this is. You know, people say that all the time. And it's like, so from a subjective perspective, you know, you can't, it's really hard to argue with. And in fact, I've made major life decisions based on information that I received in psychedelic sessions, right?
That's crazy.
I was working at the University of Missouri and had a pretty cushy job, and went to, I don't know, it was my second ayahuasca ceremony or something like that. And in the ceremony, I had the very, very, very clear download of information that I needed to leave the university. And I was kind of like, man, I'm like, seriously? I'm like, that's a big ask, right? I'm like, I don't have a plan. I don't, but it was so strong that I was like, I have to listen. I have to listen to this. Cause it, you know, and so I did, I left the university and then that's what started everything that, you know, that's what started the Neuromeditation Institute and got my first book out and led to all this. Like it would, none of this would have happened if I would have stayed at the university.
And that's so, because you had that experience with a psychedelic.
Yeah. So, you know, but there's other research. There's a guy named Luke. And he's done a bunch of research with psychedelics and psi experiences, and the connection
I've read some of his. I've read one. He is a researcher. I actually think I've read one of his papers.
I'm sure. Yeah, he's written a couple of books, and he's got a bunch of papers out. I think his name's David Luke.
David Luke. That's exactly who it is. In fact, actually, they refer to that in the LF and the MSc that we're doing. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And so there's loads of evidence that there seems to be a connection between these things. And it makes sense because if you think about it this way, without going too far down a rabbit hole, but one of the one of the primary effects of psychedelics is to temporarily shut down the networks in the brain that create your sense of self, right? So we talked before about how the brain is this filtering mechanism that it limits information and says, oh, here's reality right here. And that's it. And then with psychedelics, it essentially shuts down those mechanisms for a little while so that all of a sudden what you can see and perceive and experience becomes way bigger than what your brain normally allows. Right. Yeah. And so if you do this and have the right experience under the right conditions, or you do it enough times that you really start to, you can start to connect to that spaciousness and that energy without the psychedelics, right? It's not the same, but you can start to have more flexibility.
Which is what mediums tend to really do. It's what we do as mediums. It's interesting because I thought to myself, okay, right, you've worked in mediumship for a long time, and I've spoke to many people and researchers. If I took a psychedelic, would it enhance the experience because I had a mediumistic ability? Because I had the near-death experience. I was a medium before. Here's an interesting thing. I was working as a professional medium. And you know, I was fairly good. But I had a near-death experience. I had a car crash that nearly took us out. And I had a really strong out-of-body near-death experience. And when I came back, the abilities had enhanced even more. So, and I had this feeling of interconnectedness and everything else. So then I wonder then, because I've never done psychedelics, but it's in my mind now because of the amount of research. Do I try this to see where this will go? And am I holding on to that experience that maybe I had in that near-death experience? Or is it going to even go even deeper? Would it affect a trans medium in some way? Or is there going to be a different effect from someone who's just awakening to a mystical experience, or someone like Laura Lynn Jackson? Like, that'd be interesting. Has Laura Lynn taken any ayahuasca and had a completely different experience? Laura, if you're listening, have you? So I want to know.
Yeah. Well, and you know what's funny is most of the mediums that I've talked to have no interest in psychedelics. They're almost kind of like, they're like, and the sense I get is that they're like, I don't need to be any more open. You know, like I'm already plenty open. No,
that's
thanks.
Exactly how I feel,
you know,
but I'm
and
intrigued.
It's interesting.
It is. And that's it. That's for years and years. I've like, I'm not, I don't, there's no need to do that. I'm already, I can have the same experience. But what if I did do that and take something and then had an even deeper experience that even Hannah, or even get back to the point where I felt that same interconnectedness than I did with the near-death experience? Is there a potential even for more research in that way? So it does intrigue me, but to date I haven't done it. And to date I'm like, you know, it's there. It's in there. I'm thinking about it. And it would be interesting. And I think that might be interesting field of research.
There's so much, right? I mean, like, even in this brief conversation, right, we've come up with probably 100 ideas.
Amazing.
You know, there's so much. There's so much to do and explore, which is also what's exciting for me. Like, for me, part of this is just the sheer exploration, right? Like, feeling like there are areas that we don't understand and mystery. There's mystery out there. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's the stuff I'm interested in. Like, who cares about all the boring day-to-day stuff, right? Like, I mean, you know, we got to make money and we got to pay bills and we got to do that. But but the mystery is the, for me, the fun stuff, right? Like, I want to go more toward that.
I love that. And I honestly, we're coming to the end of the show. We've got to get you back, Jeff, because I think we could go in many, many different tangents and down many rabbit holes. This was a great deal of fun. Please, I mean, give anybody any final thoughts. Let them know where they can connect with you. Tell them about your Mind Institute and the work that you're doing, and you know, just tell us more.
Sure. Yeah. No, if people are interested in kind of learning more about what we're doing, we actually have two kinds of organizations. So there's Psychic Mind Science, which is obviously geared more toward this work and, you know, the research, but also teaching classes and workshops and retreats. And so lately what I've been doing is partnering up with mediums, and we're kind of doing combination workshops. Actually, that's why I'm going to see Lara this weekend. We're doing a workshop in LA together. And so, you know, you can find, and there's, you know, we've got videos and meditations and all kinds of stuff on there. The other website is the Neuro Meditation Institute, mm-hmm. which is geared much more toward meditation for mental wellness. But both of them involve technology. And so, you know, if folks are interested in that, there should be, there's so much content out there, but either of those websites will kind of point you in the right direction. I'm happy to help, you know, any way I can. So if people have questions, you can shoot me a message. You can find me on those websites, you know, but yeah, you know, just check it out and explore and see what you think.
And ladies and gentlemen, I will reiterate what he's saying, and I've checked out the websites and they're brilliant. And, but don't, you know, like I said, if you're interested in using the technology and you have a Mac like me, then, you know, forget it. You're going to have to wait for a bit, but, both the sites are great. We'll have them in the show notes and we'll have them in the magazine and Paranormal Daily News. This is Deadly Departed. This is Paranormal Daily News. Let us know if you've got any questions, reach out to us if you want to ask Jeff anything. And certainly, Jeff, will you come back? Will you come back and let's get deeper into some of this stuff?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'd love to come back.
It's been a fascinating conversation. It excites me. I was so excited to get this. I remember when I was telling Joe, I said, he's coming on. He's like, yes. It's getting right into my field of study here. So, and also thank you for helping me write my next dissertation anyway towards my MSc. So I'm excited about your research and stuff like that. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. This is Deadly Departed, hosted by myself, Dr. Jeff Tarrant, my guest. Please reach out to him. It's been an awesome conversation, Jeff. And I can't wait till we have the next one. God bless.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks, Jack.